Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
Watch up, Walk-Ons Nation. Another episode, another guest. We have a former teammate, a true walk-on story just like us. Riley McCarron joins the show today. He went from Dubuque all the way to New England and the Patriots. Got to be a part of a Super Bowl. What a story he has. Listen to it right now. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this one. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans. Episode 118 of the podcast. And if you're watching on YouTube, I've got my adventure hat on, and I got that for a reason, because this guy that we got on our podcast today, our guest, feels like every time we get together, it's destined to be quite the adventure. Not sure that me and my guy, Riles Mack, have had too many times that we've gotten together that haven't gotten out of hand. We got all the same friends, all the same wild stories, played a lot of good years of football together. It's about to get into a fun conversation, so let's see where it goes.
Riley, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
What's up, guys? Appreciate you guys having me.
Now, are you in a wine cellar / bathroom?
I'm at my girlfriend's parents' house.
Okay.
COVID. We've just been traveling around, spent some time in Iowa at our parents' place, but Chicago's infested, the last place I really want to be right now.
Yeah, that's tough. Is that where you're at permanently, Chicago?
Yep, I'm in Chicago now. Yep, Lincoln Park area. Been there for about a year. Almost held a real job for about a year now, so.
Damn.
Welcome to the club. That makes half the podcast.
That does. The other half never got a job and got fired from a job.
Hey,
so
you're missing out on anything, I promise.
we'll circle back to that, because that was kind of the whole, that kind of is part of your story, but we're going to go way back to the start. You hail from, I don't know the specific school, but you hail from
Waller.
Dubuque. Yep. Yeah, Dubuque, right?
Waller grad, 2012. Yep.
What was Dubuque like at the turn of the turn of the decade?
You talking about 2010? What are we talking about?
Yeah, 2010, 2011. What was Dubuque like at that time?
Dubuque, Waller, Dubuque's not much has changed in Dubuque, man. Just like any old good Iowa town, man. There's a lot
Dubuque
of good
is people. Scummy, dude. Let's just get it out there right now. Let's just call a spade a spade. Just Dubuque, like the mustache that you're rocking, Dubuque is.
No, this mustache took me about 6 weeks to grow, and it took me like 4 days. 26, and I still haven't gone through puberty.
That's all right.
But no, Dubuque's great, man. Waller was it was an awesome experience. I kind of did what everyone seems to not be doing these days and played all four sports I could for as long as I could. And then the only sport I didn't play was senior year baseball because I went to Iowa a little early. But
okay,
I was always jealous of that. You know, you Iowa guys, you guys play baseball in the summer and you have track in the spring, so you could do all four with basketball in the winter and football in the fall.
It's brutal. Obviously. I mean, spring baseball in Iowa, you know, it could snow in April.
Well, shit, I live directly east of here, and baseball and track were both in the spring.
Yeah, that's brutal.
So, no, like, I love there's no way you could do both.
Especially no school, big time.
Right.
Yeah. So you, four-sport athlete. What was it like? When did you start to kind of get recruited for football? What other opportunities did you have aside from Iowa? What was the goal? What was the dream even for you?
Honestly, in high school, I was just like, I didn't really pay attention to recruiting a whole lot. Just kind of just playing each sport as it came and just enjoyed it. And then I thought I was going to play baseball for a long time, and I would go to like some baseball camps. And then, we didn't have a quarterback my senior year of high school, so I played quarterback. Not that I am a quarterback by any means. And then, like, all of a sudden, we just, like, found a little bit of success during that time, we were, like, 500. And I was like, damn, maybe I should just play this football in college, you know? It's pretty fun. And hopefully, after my senior year, it's kind of pretty late, especially with the way recruiting is these days.
Yeah.
And I had one Division I offer, and it was to Army.
Wow.
And then I had some smaller D2 offers, and then Iowa came in the picture late, and like, no shit. They called me, like, Reese Morgan, I'll never forget this, called me like after signing day. He's like, yeah, you know, we got a spot. We got a spot for you to walk on. I was like, does that mean I got a spot on the team? Like, really how
so, barely, yeah, you can walk on. You could be a manager. I think you'd be a good player.
Yeah. That's speaking of manager, me and Andrew Stone, classic guy.
What a guy.
We were at Finish Line in the mall in Iowa City. I'll never forget this. And like, we're in there, and the guy was talking about Iowa football, and we were wearing, like, you know, Iowa stuff. And he's like, oh, you guys work for the team? You guys managers?
Oh, my God.
We just look at each other and just started laughing. Like, yeah, well, yep. Like, oh, man.
You know, I'm in your company of being mistaken for a manager for, because AJ Epinesa thought I was a manager when he walked onto campus. So
it's classic.
It's not a great feeling.
No, it's not, but it was pretty funny. It's a good laugh now, but yeah, man, I, you know, by the skin of my teeth, got a chance to come to Iowa.
So typical, this is what I've learned about Iowa football, is you take the best athlete and you just put him at quarterback, and then you worry about everything else from there.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, high school football in Iowa is, to just be honest, it's not at the level it is in other states with the bigger cities. But, hey, man, you just got to do what you got to do.
So Army came in and offered you. Did you entertain that offer at all? Or
no, I was going to go on a visit, and then it was one of those things where the visit was approaching, and I was like, I don't want to waste these guys' time anymore. Like, I'm not actually going to commit, you know, 5 years or 10 years, I guess. 5 years of school, 5 years of Army at the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I didn't entertain it too long, but yeah, so then legitimately offered.
So then who were you thinking before Reese Morgan ringing up the phone?
Honestly, it's funny people ask that, and I honestly don't know what I would have done. I didn't want to go to junior college. I probably would have played baseball somewhere.
Wow.
You probably would have made a mean shortstop for somebody.
I was going to say, Riles Max should probably be in the MLB right now.
I don't know about that, but I did like baseball. Baseball was definitely like my favorite sport growing up, and then once I got older and realized, you know, football could be, you know, a lot of fun as well, it kind of just took off from there. But if it wasn't for Iowa, yeah, I honestly to this day don't know what I would have done.
And wouldn't you know it, the common denominator, Reese Morgan, of course. What a legend. Like, what a legend. Is there a guy that he didn't find? If you're if Reese Morgan didn't find you, you ain't shit. You fucking ain't shit.
I honestly could have ended up at some random D3 school playing football and, you know, baseball or doing something like that. So it's pretty wild, but
I mean, so like, did you not have elite foot speed in high school? Because that's what you're known for. Like, you have elite foot speed.
I don't know, dude. I won the 100 meters in junior year of high school.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So then where were these offers? I don't get it, because what I learned from college football is you can take anybody who's a superb athlete and stick them with a great coach and turn them into a pretty good football.
I get it, Riley. Don't worry. It's you're too short. We're too short.
Say there's not a high demand when you're coming out of high school at 5'8", 160. there's not a demand for that.
That's true.
You know, people aren't paying the prime scholarships for those kind of guys.
That's true.
Saban wasn't trying to give you a house for the 5'8", 160 frame.
No, shoot. I couldn't even get a dog house.
That's good. So now all of a sudden you're sitting there senior year, spring of senior year, right?
Yeah. So what was signing day? February, something like
that. Yeah. Like February
basketball season. Just yeah.
And you're like, well, I'm committed to Iowa football.
Yeah. Basically it was like, you know, to these D2 schools after sign, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to sign. I'm basically waiting on Iowa. And if they don't, then I might entertain it. And then, and that happened. And I was like, going to Iowa, man.
Did you talk further with KF at all, or was it mostly just you and Coach?
I say I didn't even come on an official visit. I didn't do anything. Like, I stayed over. We played Iowa City High one night during the week, and I had stayed over with my family, and we did like the visit with Scott Southmade the next day. What a legend! Yep.
Legend.
And he just like walked us around the campus, took us through the facility, just like, you know, met with Coach Doyle, and was just like very not formal, like it was
just
official visit,
the most low-key unofficial visit you could ever take,
right? And then you know, I had been in contact with Coach Morgan, but it wasn't like he was like calling me every other day. It was right. Like, you know, like basically like, hey, can I be on the team?
And did they talk to you any about like what position they saw you at, or they're just like, hey, come on the team and we'll figure it out?
No, I think they had originally said safety.
I was going to say, I
came that first summer and I was with the DBs and I was doing like backpedaling drills, and I'm like, this is not for me. That's the last thing I was going to say, because I was barely even on the team.
Riley,
so can you're I position change real quick, KF?
Riley was out on the practice field or in the bubble thinking, I am too white for this.
it was not good. I was not comfortable. But it's funny because I didn't even go to camp freshman year. That's how much I wasn't even on.
Really? The team. I didn't know that.
And I came like first day of school, and then like all of a sudden, like I come back, they put me in the receivers room. And what had happened is they took Reese Fleming and put him from receiver to DB, me to receiver. And that's that. I was like, thank God.
That was a good decision on their part.
DB, that would have been horrible.
That would have been funny.
I probably would not have seen the field.
I wonder if we would have put you at cornerback or what we would have done.
I don't know. I'm too short to play corner, that's for sure. And I can't imagine playing or guarding any of those receivers.
Could you imagine like a 210-pound beefy Riley McCarron coming down at safety? Oh, yeah.
That would have been a short, wide safety.
No neck.
Bob Sanders.
Yeah, you would have been the white Bob Sanders. That's funny. So, I mean, goddamn, you ascended quickly, because by the time we got there a year later, I mean, I think you were already kind of working your way up on the special teams depth chart at that point, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was in the same boat as all you guys, like basically came in and like they would have, if, you know, Doyle told me to do anything, I would do it. KF tell me to do anything, I'd do it. So it's just like, you know, whatever I can do to just even just get on the goddamn kickoff team, just be a suicide bomber for one, you know.
Yep.
One play every couple, you know, so I don't know. I just, you know, did everything. And, you know, obviously the coaching staff at Iowa was just insane. Coach Doyle, I put on like 10, 15 pounds my freshman year alone.
Was it the Gatorade shakes?
Yeah.
How much do you miss the canned Gatorade shakes?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I will never forget like summer, a freshman going into freshman year. You see all these Gatorade shakes for the first time. You're like throwing them in your backpack. Then you put your backpack on and I'm like fell backwards. So
Dude, the amount of Gatorade shakes that we got out of there in backpacks.
Absurd.
It wasn't even backpacks. It became like an open thing. Like, you threw them in your laundry bag.
Oh my, absurd.
You have two laundry bags. One is with fucking Greg, and he's doing the laundry. The other one, you're hauling out like a knapsack, right? Like you're a hitchhiker.
And then the worst was, you know, if you had like the moped that had like the seat that popped up, and you'd put the bag in there, and
yep.
You got out there, and you had like a couple too many shakes, and it wouldn't. You just like slam it in there, and like it just doesn't close. You just sit on top of it, and you got.
That's perfect.
There's classic.
There's about so, nothing more that describes being a white walk-on in Iowa than stuffing way too many overpriced shakes in your moped.
Or just being a walk-on in general. You're taking breakfast, lunch, and dinner from the complex, even when they're not providing it.
Yep.
Make dinner absolutely. Out of this fridge.
Absolutely.
It's like, I'm going to take this cold meat sandwich and I'll just eat the cold meat sandwich for lunch. But then for dinner, I'm going to take another cold meat sandwich. No, I'm going to take the meat out of it and I'm going to fry it up in a skillet.
Dude, that was back before Shabazz Effect. That was back. You had shakes and like fruit in the weight room.
Yeah,
that was
it. Like bars or something like that.
Right, but, yeah, you had to make a meal out of Gatorade bars. And, yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, that's classic.
So 2012, bad year. Your freshman year? Not a good year for the team.
No.
I actually
went awakening too. You know, you come in freshman year like, damn, I'm about to redshirt. You know, these workouts are going to be tough, but you know, I don't have any game day pressure. About to go
look around and get smoked.
Get this sick gear for the bowl game. And then you go 4-8 and you're doing prowlers in December. And you're like, yeah, this is not what I was planning on doing. Horrible. That was a rude awakening though.
Right. But, you were sitting there thinking, wow, I really got duped, huh?
Yeah, that was brutal. Yeah. We legit, I'll never forget it. We played Nebraska on like what was that, Black Friday. And
yeah.
Like literally the following Tuesday, the whole team is doing prowlers.
Oh.
Even the seniors.
Good. Oh yeah. I don't know actually. I don't even remember that. But
that would have been interesting. It's like technically your team is still alive until like all the bowls have been announced,
right?
And like you can still do like team activities and stuff.
That was brutal.
Yeah, it wouldn't be funny. I wonder if any seniors showed up to push prowlers.
That was a rude awakening because like we did prowlers, and then we had like a 5-week Christmas break where they sent you home like a, you know, the workout cards, and it had like 5 weeks worth. It wasn't like the normal 2 weeks after the bowl game.
Oh,
and then
man.
We came right back to prowlers again. It was brutal. It was a brutal stretch to open the old college football career.
not good, man.
It only got better from there, though.
Yeah, Mac, you have either the number one or second place most showed special teams clip in Iowa football history. It's either you or Bob Sanders, and like,
I don't know if I deserve to be in that company.
And also, by the way, I was talking shit on that play, and I didn't do anything.
You were talking. I think Coach Wallace talked about you talking shit.
The Iowa State one? What are you talking about?
When you smoked Lazard.
Yeah, dude. I don't know. I that was not the form tackle they were teaching at Iowa. I know that. I was just amped up. First time on the field. Just
shoot or shoot, Mac.
Suicide bomber.
The opposite nut, man. You knifed him.
If I miss, I miss.
I want to say on that play, and I don't know if we could find it on YouTube for those listening. Maybe I'll try and find it and post it when this episode goes live, but I want to almost say, because you're our gunner, obviously, on punt team that year, and I mean, just there's never been more perfect timing in the world. I want to say after you made that play, like we were kind of running off the field, and you said something like, "I got so lucky" or something like that. Like
I did, dude. Honestly, I did get lucky that he went the way he did.
It's still one of the smoothest plays I've ever seen.
So smooth, dude.
Yeah, that was fun, man. I mean, just stuff like that, especially you guys were there. That game is just on a whole other energy level. Like it can't even describe it. I don't know why, but it always is. And
I mean,
lit.
It got the 5'10" long snapper jacked enough to go talk shit to the 4-star recruit on the ground right now.
Yeah, dude.
It was electric playing there in the hostile environment. That was fun.
It's a lot of fun. We've talked about how cool it is to go in there and be getting the bird from everybody from the age of 6 to 60.
Right. Like, honestly, like, sometimes, I mean, that was just fun to play those, like, hostile away games. It was like, damn, like, you know, we're going to find out today if this place is going to be quiet by the fourth quarter or not.
Yeah.
Dude, and it always was for us.
And when that ball was about to get kicked off, that place was literally had some reverb to it. Like the wavelengths were shaking in front of your eyes.
Oh yeah. Dude, not the same energy at the end of the game though.
Never.
Bro.
Not at Jack Trice.
Dude, before kickoff, you know, especially those evening games, like 3:30, lights kind of start to go down, and it's like you kind of it's for an Iowa kid, which Kevin, I'll call you an honorary Iowa kid. We got four guys
appreciate that.
It meant a lot. It meant a lot.
Absolutely.
And you could feel like the weight of the state. It's like, fuck, man. It's one side versus the other.
Every time we lined up, dude, the weight of the entire state was on it.
Right. And it was crazy because, like, from the Iowa perspective, it was like, we're supposed to win this game. Like,
yeah.
It's not like we need to hype this up because this is a team that we need to beat or, like, that's, you know, more, you know, they're not better than us. We're not the underdog. So it was like the pressure from that was just like, we have to win this game. Like,
right.
We're supposed to win this game.
There's no other option than it being our state. Like, when we lost to them, that was the worst experience. That was
ever.
The top three. Like, it was terrible.
It's not just that day. It's not just that week. It's the whole year. Those fuckers over there. God, I fucking
And it's
hate
even
those
worse guys. When you lose and you're like, dang, if we play, you know, we beat them 9 out of 10 times. That's the worst part when you know you're better.
So that was the year you made that play was 2015.
That was the Rose Bowl season, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, 2015. And so at that point in time, so you're now in your that would have been your fourth season.
So my third, my redshirt junior year.
So at that time you were 2015. So you had just been put on scholarship.
Yep, I got. I think so. Cole Crossan and I got it at the same time. We both came in as walk-ons.
Yep. I remember it vividly because Coach pulled me in immediately after he pulled you two in and gave it to you and said, "Hey, we gave the last scholarships to Riley and Cole. You're the odd man out."
I literally got that same thing. I don't know if it was a year before. It was like, Bo Bauer and Boone.
Yep.
Got their scholarships, and me and Cole were like, damn, that sucks. But
let me just one up you all. Mine got given to Matt Quarles.
Oh no.
I broke my leg for that program, and my scholarship got given to Matt Quarles.
I forgot Matt Quarles was even a human until you just said his name.
Yes.
Drake will never forget his name.
Yo, that's low-key maybe the biggest snub in the history of college scholarships right there.
I want you to know that Matt Quarles had my scholarship when I scored against Ohio State.
That'd be the most elite feeling ever, scoring against OSU in a game where you just throttled them.
Dude, showed them my meat right afterwards, too.
Okay, well then. Back to 2015. It's your second to last season. At this point, you're the gunner on punt. How much, I don't really remember, how much were you involved with the offense? You scored.
First 2 years, I didn't, like, I had, like, total combined like 3 catches for like 10 yards for my 2 years, like averaging like a third of a yard a game.
That's pretty sick.
It was just special teams. Honestly, I was on some punt return, and then I did, the last thing I thought I was going to do was gunner. Let's be honest. I never thought I'd be playing gunner. I was like, there's faster, you know, better athletes out there that can do that. But that was fun, man. I never expected to have that much fun. And we had a pretty nifty punt scheme. When they started spreading it out, I mean, that was fun to play on.
This punt scheme was so refreshing for Iowa. It was extremely important, to be honest.
Right.
Right move, shield, sword,
that was a
shift.
I will admit, I hated moving because it was like, all right, I got to run across the field before I run down the field.
I always felt terrible for you guys in practice. Like, I knew that running wasn't as hard at all as it was for me, but, like, I was breathing hard as hell, dude. Sometimes I couldn't get the cadences out hardly because my fat ass was so tired.
It was at the beginning of practice, and it would, like, by the time you were done with it, you're like, all right, I guess I'm loose. Like,
you're right, though, because punt period went from a kind of, you know, it wasn't a very physical tolling period. Yeah. You were gassed by the end of it. And then as defense, we went to tackling circuit. Then we went to individual. After the first half hour of practice, I'm fucking gassed.
Let me tell you about a specialist who does warm up to punt period to tackling circuit. Was it Polamalu who needed oxygen when he returned at 100 yards versus the Cardinals in that one
James
Super
Harrison
Bowl?
Harrison needed oxygen after the Super
Bowl. James Harrison. I was that guy laying in the indoor every day.
Dude, it was brutal, man. It was like, all right, I'm going to go run about 50 yard sprints. I'm going to jog back and like watch the 6 minutes tick off the clock.
How bad is it when they make us restart punt period?
It's
how bad is that?
Worst of all time.
You just like, you hope you know who fucked it up and you just start motherfucking them.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, KF, I got in trouble bad a couple times during a game from KF for motherfucking a punter, but he let me get into a bad habit of him practice because he let me motherfuck punters till the cows come home, okay? So
brutal. There was nothing worse than like everything on punt and then all of a sudden just a shank punt, everybody back. It was like, damn, that was a smooth operation except for the most important part.
Right. It, the worst thing's like you're like running, you're like 20 yards downfield, you hear the crowd go, ooh. Yeah. You're like, oh shit, yeah, what happened? Good. Who fucked up? Who blocked the punt? It's like, nah, the punt just didn't go very far.
Dude, you know how bad that hurt me inside? Like, I'm a part of that, right? So like,
that's
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Yelled at you.
Snap was perfect, huh? But punt sucked. So I'm a part of that. And so I hurt so bad. I'm like, son of a bitch. Son of a fucking bitch. That's on us. That's on us. That's on me, coach. Snap was fine, but that's on me. I'll take that one because he's already got three on his belt for the day. So I'll take that one.
All right. Take one for the team.
But then eventually, I wonder, was it a difficult time not getting reps? Did you ever feel before you started producing offensively? Because eventually you became a crucial part of our offense. Fucking.
The thing that benefited me most at the receiver position was like, I didn't even have a position. I wasn't an XZ. I was just like, they just throw me in there wherever someone was needed for legs or whatever. And so like, I got to know all three positions, even though I wasn't going to go in the game at an X receiver. You know, they weren't going to throw my little ass out there.
Right.
But that one camp, the camp or the year that Cole and I got the scholarships, I kind of just like, well, knew all the positions. So able to just like, just get thrown in there with the fire. And that's when I kind of started playing receiver, honestly.
Did you feel like before that, or maybe it clicked that summer or something, or was it a situation where you just needed a shot on the field, just start throwing balls your way and it was going to happen?
It was a little bit of both, but honestly crazy that like, to think about when I first came in, I didn't know shit about playing receiver. I was just out there running around.
Yeah.
Like, so it took, you know, it took a while to learn and like get a feel for it. And then not to mention like when Matt Vandenberg came in, I mean, we kind of played the same position and he was a really good young player and like fast little dude. And he had a lot of success. So, I mean, obviously I played behind him a little bit when we had Tavon and Hillier and those guys.
Yeah.
I was kind of like the fourth or fifth guy.
Who would you say, maybe you just named him right there, but who are the big guys who kind of like you followed and kind of studied and helped you learn that receiver spot that you had never played before?
I mean, we had a really good group of guys, especially that Rose Bowl season. Even before then, like Kevontae Martin Manley, it was awesome working with him. With the records he set, he was just a great receiver. But like, you know, Jacob Hillier, I mean, talk about one of the hardworking receivers that we had. Like that dude would go in and crack linebackers. Like it was his job, and he'd just go in there, not say boo, and just tough dude for a receiver. And then we just had, I mean, Smitty was a fun guy to be around, and Meerkat, and obviously a hard worker, and he's a really talented young dude. So it was just fun to play with those guys.
You just reminded me of Hilly, who quite potentially is one of my favorite players that I ever played with. I love Hillier so much.
Yeah,
he's such a good dude.
He's a gritty guy, you know.
The gritty. That's what he's known for, dude. He's a gangster.
The blocks he would make.
Like, not only was he just a gritty dude, and like you respected him for, you know, his hard work and how little, you know, he didn't get like all the attention like, you know, Tavon and, you know, Meerkat got that season.
Yeah.
But I mean, he did a lot of the, you know, the dirty work that went unnoticed, and he was a dog for that. And then not to mention, he was just an awesome teammate.
Awesome.
Good dude to be around.
Dude, I had not thought of him. We got to put him on the list for the podcast. I would love to get Hilly on.
Yeah, he was a great dude. Just always, you know, in a good mood, just, you know, but he,
funny.
He'd go to war for you though, man. He was
absolutely. Awesome. So that 15 season happens. I guess from your perspective, what was it like to kind of be one of those older guys? You know, we always talk about it on this show. You ascend kind of the ranks. You put in your work. At this point in your redshirt junior season, you've been there 4 years. You've earned the respect of Doyle. You've earned the respect of KF, this coaching staff. And now you're in a spot where you were one of the, you know, you're one of the top 25% oldest guys on the team, kind of in a leadership role, older. What was it like being in that spot during that 2015 season?
I mean, it's definitely, I mean, the older you get, the more comfortable you get. It's just, you know, there's not as much stress when you're younger. You know, you're constantly getting, you know, yelled at, whatever. The game is so much faster. It slows down a little bit, but I don't know. I just enjoyed, you know, going out there with those guys. And it was like, at the same time of being, you know, the fourth, fifth receiver, like special teams, they, like, that's where I had all of my fun that Rose Bowl year. I mean, playing receiver was fun, but I played more snaps at special teams than anything. I mean, that was fun. Like, when you go out there, a gunner in a game, like, that was some fun shit. It was just one-on-one with the dude, mano y mano, baby.
Yeah, it gets intense fast.
It was just like, am I going to, you know, you beat this dude or what? Like, that's all it came down to.
So that's – I got a question about off-season training and how much, like, the speed and agility off-season work gave you – confidence, because I feel like you compete against all those dudes and right. You were just elite at that shit, and you're like, okay, I can get open against these clowns, like, I'm smoking them right now, I can get open.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you guys obviously firsthand, Coach Doyle, just the off-season programs was just insane. And then I think the biggest thing, I mean, the training speaks for itself, like, you know, how much better we all got just from him alone, not even like just the coaches on the field, you know, stronger, faster. But it was so damn competitive, you know, when Doyle blew the whistle, it was like the fucking Olympics started, you know?
Oh yeah.
It was fun shit. Like, just going,
oh dude, it's the best. It was better than games.
And like, when you lost and like you had people talking shit, especially people that you think you should have beat and all that, you're like, damn, like this shit's real.
Me and Ben Neiman had it down to, we had to buy each other dinner and movie tickets and shit if one of us won more reps against the other one.
Yeah, dude, that's honestly some of the stuff I'll miss, like that speed work in the summer when you're like, your shirt's just a different gray before you even done the warm up. You're doing all this stuff. The cone drills, like the 3-2-1, like that cone stuff. That was some fun stuff.
Oh, dude. So I just did it today. I've been training a couple of local kids. And, you know, we run through like a 35 to 45 minute footwork, kind of what our warm up used to be for a summer workout, right?
Right.
And they were pretty gassed today. And I was like, so if y'all were at Iowa, we'd be going into lift right now.
Yeah.
We just got done with the warm up. And that's I ran them through exactly what a warm up would be. I mean, we did the three cone drill, like 2-3-1, call it out, bunny chaser. We did it all, and they were gassed, and they're like, dude, that was the warm up. Like, how long are you at the complex? And I'm like, you're there for 3 fucking hours. So buckle up.
Those summer workouts are brutal.
As long as it takes you to eat breakfast, warm your own body up, take care of stuff in the training room, train for a hell of a long period of time, recover and get back ready.
I remember it was like an art. Like, when you started the hard conditioning and you do like the warm up and then you come in to lift, it was like, all right, I don't want to be the first one done lifting, sit there and just gas myself. But I don't want to be the last one because I don't want to put my card away and then, you know, a minute later I'm running.
Oh, you're so right.
That is right? So true.
Especially during GPP season. If you were the last one done with your lift, you got fucked because you went right into prowlers right there.
That was me every single time. I'm a slow lifter. Can't help it. I can't race through the shit. My muscles don't recover that good. I'm not made of vibranium. I was always last.
Riley just explained it perfectly. In my head, especially when I used to struggle like 13, 14, 15 kind of, I would sit there in the weight room and like, fuck, I have to do the squat set, but I'm not ready to squat yet. But if I don't do the squat set, the guys are about ready to run and then I'm going to have to run and I have to lose here somewhere. I lose.
And like, honestly, the worst year of that is like when you're young and you're coming in and your maxes are just skyrocketing.
Oh,
and
oh,
then yeah. like finally start to slow down because it's getting pretty heavy. And then that summer where it's just heavy and you're like, damn, like this conditioning is about to suck.
Bad. Just the anxiety of, oh God, I can still feel it. You put your fucking lifting shoes away and your cleats are sitting right outside in the indoor.
Brutal.
And you just kind of take a deep breath and you're
and
like.
And that first breath when you hit the indoor from the AC to the
hot.
Indoor, that oh. first breath gives you the worst fit. Oh.
Dude, you want
to come in, you come from the indoor after the warm up to the AC, you're like, ooh, this is nice, but I'm gonna be going right back out to that shit in about an hour.
Dude, you walk out, and then most likely, as long as it isn't raining, you have the 120-yard walk from the weight room to the outdoor field. And that entire time, you're wondering,
how am I gonna make it through this?
Is today the day where I just walk off the field and not do the conditioning?
Shout out, Gressel.
Gress man.
I mean,
oh, man, that was classic. I was in that lifting group. That was honestly. You saw,
could you explain that for us? Because I wasn't there.
None of us were in that lift group.
Things ever. Like, honestly, it took some balls to actually do that.
Talk. What happened? Because we've only heard the story. None of those.
I don't know what specifically happened, but you remember when we did like the barbell workout and then you'd like
yes.
barefoot a 55?
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify. One of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app, search for Washed Up Walk-Ons on Spotify, or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
Doyle had got on him or something, and it was just like, you know how Doyle is. He gets on you.
And he'll keep going.
Yeah, he just, you know. And then it was just like, he did a rep, started running. He was just like, in Angels in the Outfield, when he told him to run home, Grass just kept on going. He just went right through the doors to the locker room, man. It was like,
and we never saw him again.
Never.
I never saw him again after that.
Like you have to, that has to be premeditated, right? You just don't think in the middle of that rap, I'm just going to keep going. There's no way.
Yeah. No I don't way. Know. I mean, it's not like he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to get, you know, just screamed at today during, and I'm just running out.
Dude, when Doyle would get on somebody and like they did something in the warm up, and then he'd find something that they weren't doing right in the weight room.
Right.
And then we go out and we're doing GPP and they fuck up a GPP and it's just one. After another, and you just sit there like, God, man, I really feel sorry for you, but thank you so much for taking Doyle's attention today, because I'm sucking ass right now.
And like sometimes you felt bad, like if someone didn't touch a line and you're like gassed, we're doing 60s or something, and he's just going off on him. You're like, dude, I feel bad for that dude, but this breather's just not.
this extra 20 seconds is clutch right now.
Right? It's like, whoo, man. I don't want you to do that again, but thank you.
Man, it's so funny because I would go back and do all of this in a heartbeat, but it's right? So anxiety-inducing.
The best feeling, though, you're just done with the workout, and then it's just like a pool party inside in the hot tub with the boys.
It's best
nice recovery pool you got there. Everyone's just swimming around, like just cannonballs.
Just walking past the next group that you know is about to get put through a shitter.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone, dude, and that's the craziest thing. Everyone on the next group is standing there kind of like, no one wants to ask, but everyone in their mind is like, hey, was it bad? Was it bad?
Yeah, right.
And yeah. Every time if someone said that to me, I was like, nah, it was good. Good. You'll be fine.
Were you
you'll
guys
be
there
fine.
Yet when we did that strongman where you carried the sandbag? Like
50- we did it
yes,
one time.
Yes.
Prowler that was just loaded, and then you pulled it 25 yards as well.
That hurt.
And it timed
so bad.
2 minutes, and they cut you off, and like,
yep,
you didn't finish. And there was like 2 minutes, people were just fucking pissed. Like, oh,
dude, I did it in a minute 57. I barely fucking made it.
That was brutal.
I remember it was a 50-yard sandbag carry.
Walk.
And then you set the sandbag down, you push the prowler 25, and you pulled it 25.
Yep. Yep. And the honestly, the part that killed you was just the pulling.
Oh.
You got no body.
Because you were at the last part.
Brutal.
My hamstrings fell off the bone.
That stuff was brutal, man.
Anyway.
Good times.
So that was a good walk down memory lane. Jesus.
Classic.
They're missing out on that right now. Well, close.
I know. Almost. It's crazy. Oh. I couldn't imagine being a college athlete right now with like all the unknowns. It'd be crazy.
It's weird. But anyway, so the 2015 season, 2016, your last year, right? 12, 13, 14, 15, yeah, 16.
Yeah.
You kind of became that focal part of our receiving. I mean, you were our fucking Bill Belichick, and we'll get there because it actually happened. You were our fucking little white receiver that just ran incredible routes and got open and did everything right. And one of my favorite plays from that season is your touchdown against Iowa State. Right. Yeah, 2016 at Iowa State, right?
15.
Oh, was that 15?
Yeah.
That was the corner route.
Oh, damn. Well, that's one of my favorite plays ever, is that CJ.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pullout.
Yeah. That was so.
That was my first college touchdown, I believe. Or like, yeah.
Dude.
And like first meaningful catch.
You were hyped too, huh?
Dude, that was an insane game.
What does that
feel? Been more
the last
hype.
Thing I expected to do is be catching a touchdown pass. Like at that point, I was maybe getting like 10 snaps a game at receiver.
Yeah.
You know?
Man.
You sure as hell weren't throwing me in on double moves, like where I was the only receiver running a route.
Yeah.
If I remember right, I think Hillier was supposed to be in on that play, and he had been like gassed, like he was out there for the whole drive, and I came in for one play, and it happened to be that.
That's incredible.
Bingo. Yeah,
now, Kevin, you had a question.
I got to ask you, was it more fun beating Iowa State in a kind of close game at their place, or just beating the fucking shit out of them the next year, your senior year?
I don't know. It was pretty elite the next year. It was like they came to Iowa, and it was like, oh, you know, another you know, big game. It's going to be another close one. And then all of a sudden, like after the first quarter was over, it was like, okay, maybe next year, 2018 or 2017.
I gotta say, beating the shit out of Iowa State, that felt pretty damn good.
Hey, you know what's great is it didn't happen in 2017 or 18 or 19.
Right?
They haven't beat us since 14. Suck our dick.
I mean, 2016 at home when we just killed Iowa State, like that was electric. Like just as electric in the fourth quarter, like just like I think they got, you know, they get so much out of it like we do when we just kill them. The fans just
What was your most electric Kinnick crowd?
Ooh, probably Michigan 16, dude.
Oh.
That was lit.
More lit than the Big Ten championship?
Like, we're talking about a team that was talking about maybe getting a chance at going to the national championship.
True.
And we were 5-4 at the time.
I think. Yeah.
Something like right?
And we had just got our fucking throats clogged by Penn State.
Right. Not that we were trying to lose that game, but that was a blessing in disguise because I don't think Michigan really thought much of us, to be honest.
Yeah, they.
And then they got in a dogfight and they weren't exactly sure how to respond.
Yeah, it was funny. No, it's funny you say that because when I was with the Texans, one of the D linemen from Michigan, he had said, he's like, dude, I'm not going to lie, playing that night at Kinnick was pretty sick.
100%.
The most electric college football games. He goes, the fans right on top of you. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I heard about it, but I can only imagine.
The low-key play of the game is out of half. Brady fucking falls on that fumble.
Huge.
Oh, my God.
Huge.
Bro.
The Brady Ross moment of the century, dude. His claim to fame. The amount of times that he sucked himself off over that play.
Dude, it was elite, though. Hey, I mean, we needed that so bad.
He earned that self-sucking because that, like, damn near
was a big-time play.
Dude, like that's so huge.
Jaleel and Face safety. Oh. Like when I saw that happen, I'm like, dude, these guys are gonna manhandle this offensive line the whole game.
Let's do it.
Yeah, that man. Our defense just played lights out that game.
Jabril wasn't shit.
No, I mean, yeah,
it was
dog. Desmond and those guys were on another level that game.
It was from the first drive on offense that I had confidence because we were able to move the ball a little bit. Like we got a first down. Like we had some positive plays. Like it made sense that we were going to be able to do it. We just didn't get out there and get walked.
Right. Yeah. Dude, just getting a couple first downs on your first drive, you don't realize how like much momentum that can create, even if you have to punt eventually. But like when you can get a first down or two on the first drive, it's like, okay, we can, you know. But when you're stuck trying, you know, it's your third or fourth drive, you have to get a first down. You're like, Jesus.
Yeah. And it really helps the anxiety of the punt team, too. Let me tell you.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, love when we're backed. Hey, early on, love when we're backed up. Snappers, love that. Hey, put me anywhere closer to the end zone so I can throw this safety out and we just give it to the other team.
Oh, holding on the opening drive. We're punting off our 8-yard line. Opening drive.
Love it.
Love it. Not, hey, not pressure at all.
I'm looking between.
We went to Michigan State and we were literally behind. We were punting out of the end zone every single time in the first half.
Not good, dude. We were on the 2-yard line for our second punt. I remember it. My hands were sweating more than I would have liked.
Palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms spaghetti.
Want spaghetti, extra meatballs.
Dude, speaking of food, those pregame meals Friday night.
Oh.
We just did a nutrition episode the other day.
We'll throw the Kirkwood Hotel in there as the go.
Hey, Riley, because I know you still remember it. Give me the walkthrough from the salad bar all the way to the condiments at the end. What does the Riley McCarron plate look like?
I just remember it evolved over the years because you hear about other teammates like, oh, you got to do this, that's good. And like,
yep.
By the time you're a senior, it's like, okay, I got the plate.
I know a thing or two now, but yeah, go for it.
And I would just get a massive salad. Then you just go, I'd get the steak, I'd get barbecue and honey mustard and mix them.
Which steak? The well done and medium rare?
Medium.
Thank you.
And then I would get spaghetti, the meat sauce, the sweet potato with the bread, just loaded.
Those sweet potatoes. Oh my God.
Maybe throw some veggies on there and then, you know, like 3 hours later, just slamming burgers and ice cream.
And you're going balls deep in the ice cream container.
Yeah, but what's crazy is I never really ate on 11 a.m. game. Like, I would eat, like, some fruit, and that was really it. Like, I was still stuffed from the night before. I didn't eat.
Yeah, dude, I felt like I was the only one who ate a big breakfast the morning of.
You were.
No, I ate a big breakfast, too. I didn't really like the eggs very much because I think hotel eggs are fake and gross.
The eggs were trash. Yeah.
But
anytime they're putting eggs in a huge container, it's just not for me.
The amount of food that I ate at the stadium was pregame was kind of gross. Grade
bars, it's fruit,
and the amount of the number of cups of coffee I had the morning of a game.
Oh yeah,
also not healthy at all.
When you get to the stadium, and you got Lima like, "Who wants apple? Who wants apple?"
I was just gonna say, I can still hear Joel. I can hear Joel. Boost oranges, apples,
juice.
What do you want? Juice.
Oh, dude, yeah, that's classic, man.
Do you have any other favorite memories from your time at Iowa?
Dude, it's so hard to narrow one. I feel like we just had so – I mean, the summers were elite. Like, when we would go work out and then you had the rest of the day free, especially
golf. You're not taking class. Played so many rounds of golf.
Oh, my gosh. Then when on, like, a Friday, you just finish the week, just take a 30 rack out there and we're just playing, like, 15. Dude, we played so much golf that one summer.
Yeah, it was a disgusting amount. The amount of money Pete Pekar spent on golf in one summer –
He was like the MJ of our group betting on golf.
Yes. Like me and Pete had a $100 round, 18, just one-on-one.
Yeah.
Pete beat me by 2 strokes. He shot 79, I shot 81, and I had 4 3-putts in one round.
Pete
golfed like 72 holes like in one day.
That's disgusting.
Pete is the Michael Jordan of our fucking time at Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
He's the Michael Jordan of all my friends.
Yeah, 100%.
Sauce, man.
Yeah, what legendary. I don't know, dude. There's so many. I mean, like, dude, honestly, some of the best memories, though, I don't know if you guys will agree, but especially that 12-0 season, just like Saturday night's wild.
What?
Wild. Like,
we gotta talk when you about start it.
Getting like 8-9-0, just like wild. Like, I mean, just think about it. You work so hard all week, you don't do anything socially except for with your teammates, really. And then you win a big game on Saturday. And
bro, Halloween was after
Halloween
8-0.
Halloween was
no,
silly
that was not. It was Maryland's. Yeah, I don't
9-0.
Know.
And 0?
No, it was.
I think it's 8-8.
It was after Maryland.
It was birthday. We were 8-0, and That was a wild night. We had Halloween.
Kevin, wasn't that we're having fun?
No. That was the following year. That was 16. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, dude, Saturday nights, it was like you went out Saturday night and Sunday didn't exist in your mind.
But the problem is it did exist in reality.
You woke up and like everyone came in. So that's what I was getting to. Sunday morning, you go sit in the hot tub for a while and like you're like, all right, I'm going to sweat a little bit. And then like half the team's in there and everyone's telling off stories from the night before.
You had to recount your mistakes as you were sweating them out.
Right. You're
like, oh. Now, I don't know if you guys ever experienced this, but the one time that I came to Sunday hungover, I felt like I ran better. I heard that George would say that too.
I squatted better when I had all of that alcohol calorie in me.
See, it was brutal when you were young and you had to go like legit work out and condition. Like,
oh, bad.
Yeah. Like the young guys, like you, Sunday's a work day.
Yeah. Right.
Now, back in the day, like our class, we probably only did this 3 or 4 times, but they used to have developmental practices on Sunday.
Yeah, dude.
After conditioning, you threw on the pads and you had a blocks 9-on-7 individual. Right.
The kids today would quit.
That was the times where I was wondering why people thought this was worth it. Yeah.
So my brother said that his freshman year, y'all did that like every Sunday pretty much.
We would like legit, this was like before this was like old school schedule. Like we would watch the entire game film and then like the guys that actually played, you know, would like roll out and like do a little jog, a little run, and they'd be done. And we'd be like lifting still, and they'd be like already showered, walking out. Then we'd go condition, and then we'd put our shoulder pads and helmets on and have like,
wow,
like 30 minute practice.
That makes you want to throw up and quit.
Dude, that is suicide city, you know, right?
Minute practice, they're doing 9-on-7 blocks. Receivers are doing 1-on-1 blocking, like all the worst
parts of practice. Yeah, we did it like 3 times, I think, our freshman year.
Brutal.
Not good. Not good.
And then it kind of just went away because that's just craziness.
Freshman year, we had some guys, you know, missing study hall. You know how that shit goes. And we had to do the roll across the field and back twice. And this was after a Sunday, like, conditioning.
Yeah.
Like, when you're here. Oh, my gosh. Everyone was puking. It was brutal. Greg Garman. You remember him?
Yeah.
Greg Garman's before our time.
He was before, but I remember him.
Yeah, man. That kid just would not go to class. We paid for it.
No, I remember our freshman year, we got a text from Teamworks, you know, the massive group text that goes out to everyone. It was like 6 a.m. meeting in the indoor with KF. Bring your cleats.
Not like, good. Dude, that's exactly what it said. That's exactly what it said.
You remember how bad we were sweating?
We were in the dorms like, oh no, what did we do?
The worst news, especially when you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because it was the same thing. Like, people not going to class, missing LC hours. And then, it was like 8 people got called out. 5 of them were from your fucking class, Riley, and we all got shit on.
Dude, I remember Bo going around the hallway, going around. He was dead ass going around the hallway, the third floor and the second floor of Hillcrest going, who fucking fucked up? Who's not going to class? He was pissed. He was going door to door trying to figure out who fucked up.
Brutal, yeah. One time I remember we at 5 a.m. our freshman year had to come, and we just walked the stadium stairs up and down.
Yep,
and
I heard about that.
Yeah, we heard about that one too.
When I rolled, like, I was Ralph and everywhere. Like, I can't do the spinning. I'm just puking everywhere. Some people are just spinning like it's nothing. And I was like, damn, if we ever need a punishment, please let us walk these stairs again.
Yeah. Oh man, like rolling, like that's not really
like,
it's not something you can like just tough out, man. It's just you're spinning, man. That just don't feel good on the stomach.
I'm in your boat. I can't do it.
Dude, I couldn't either. Fuck that.
Brutal.
Wow.
Good old time.
I didn't know this whole podcast was going to be a walk down memory lane.
Dude, I can honestly say, though, I never had to push the wood. That's pretty chill.
I never pushed did it either.
And it hurt so bad. Like,
that was enough for me not to want to do it. Seeing someone else do it, I was like, I will set 8 alarms before I do that.
Maybe that was. I had a couple of insanely close calls, though. Did you have any insanely close calls?
I don't remember really having any close calls.
Kluver tried it many times.
Yeah, if you want to feel your heart beat out of your fucking
chest.
Seriously,
though, that was the worst. It was like, even if it was an innocent, like, sleep through an alarm or whatever. It was like when you got there, you knew that that's not how it was going to go over. It was going to be you knew you had to work out and you weren't here.
There is no excuse that was viable. No,
not good.
Yeah, I was,
whoever you wake up and your heart's like,
dude, yeah, it's fucking
that motherfucker beating it out of him.
Dude, so I don't know how Drake and I's ACLs were still intact, because the morning we woke up 14 minutes before we were supposed to be there.
That's
and we jumped off the top of our bunks. I didn't even feel my feet hit the ground, and then we literally ran down three flights of stairs
to the moped and motorcycle, and we just got ghost.
Going, dude, the worst, going through University Heights on your moped, that was like, you just like get to the stop sign up there right off Benton, and you just like sign of the cross, like, please.
Hope the cops aren't out.
Even when you think that you can't get pulled over, like, they'll find some reason.
Yeah, it's wild. It's brutal. Okay, I want to continue because you have more to your story. So we finish up in 16. You graduate, and Riley McCarron, at least this is the story I heard or whatever. Riley McCarron's done with football. He's retired, and he's going to be an accountant.
What an idiot. So I just played some special teams, like a little bit of receiver. I was like, okay, NFL is like not even on my radar. So my junior year, right after that heartbreak, I hate to bring it up, that heartbreak loss to Michigan State, yeah, I had drove to Kansas City, had a job interview with like a accounting firm, and I got the offer, whatever, and I accepted it. But it wasn't until after my senior year. And then senior year, when Mir went down with that foot injury, I started playing the slot a little bit more. And then, you know, finally had some success, you know. And then all of a sudden people were like, dude, you should probably give the NFL a shot. What do you have to lose? And I'm like, no, I already got a job. Like, it's whatever. And I went to this job in Kansas City after the bowl game for no joke. 4 days, and I was like, emailed the recruiting lady, and I was like, yeah, I don't think this is the right fit for me. I gotta go give this football thing a shot. And they were so cool about it, turned my stuff in the next day, and I just drove back to Iowa City.
Wow.
Started training with the, you know, the pro day guys or whatever.
That's a gangster move. That's something I would expect that around.
Obviously, there's no agents like reach, you know, trying to like sign me like during the year, but there's this one guy, shout out
Kenny,
and Ken Zunjic. He just left a message on my machine, and I was like, that's going to be my agent. That's my guy.
Now, shout out to my guy, Ken.
Now, I remember you having a pretty amazing pro day, right?
Dude, that's like Drake said earlier, like all those things that we did with Doyle, like that's to me what pro day was. It was like all these little drills we'd been doing our entire career, and then you just
– and you finally got to ball out on the biggest stage. Like,
and you know, I mean, you guys did it. The adrenaline on pro days, unmatched.
Insane.
Like, pro day was fun, dude.
Pro day was not that fun.
If you don't hurt yourself, and it's like, you know, you don't let the moment get too big. Like, dude, it was just fun.
Right. It was. Yeah, dude. It was just it's just competitive. But like four and a half years prior to pro day, I was a 5'8", 160-pound dude that barely made it as a walk on to Iowa. Going to run in front of 32 teams in the NFL was not what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
The last thing I expected to be doing.
I'm in the same boat as you. That's what allowed me to relax, because like Kevin said, like pro day was,
I had nothing to lose.
Right. Like I was in Marshalltown, Iowa 5 years ago. Like I'm fat. Okay. That it is what it is. I'm probably not going to play in the NFL.
How much weight did you put on after your senior season?
20, almost 30 pounds.
Dude, that's almost as impressive as losing all the weight.
It was
it's probably harder,
bro. It was, if you, lifestyle wise, I lived the most disgusting, worthless lifestyle in the history of 4 month period that ever been lived.
You maximized your caloric intake, and you minimized your caloric output outside of workouts.
100%. So that was the year Fortnite got popular, Riles, and we fucking played Fortnite 10 hours a day.
Right. Fortnite, like, if these college kids, like, only doing Fortnite, they're probably playing Fortnite at the LC.
They're playing probably Warzone, Fortnite, everything.
But anyway, the same thing. Like, when we walked out there, you know, and they fucking deck you out, man. They give you the cool ass gear. I got it right here hanging in my closet.
Oh, yeah.
It's like your name's on the back, and like, there's like 50 people from NFL organizations right there to watch you and your boys just run around and play football.
Right. And my senior year, it obviously helped. Like, we had George and CJ and mm-hmm. Esmond, and like, obviously, like, they're watching these guys because they're about to get drafted and like be a big part of the teams that they get drafted to. So it was just like, it was the electric factory in there.
Oh man. So yeah, you just ball out.
Yeah.
And then you know what? Take us through the draft.
Pro day. And then like, you think you had like, oh man, like I did the best I could have and like a best possible outcome. No one calls you.
Nobody.
No teams. You're like, yep. Told you I should have stayed with that job in Kansas City.
It was real bad, man.
It was brutal.
We all know that bad feeling.
Like, and if someone did call us like, oh, I'm so-and-so with, you know, whatever team, like just trying to get some like info on you. And it was just like the most generic, like they're filling out like an info sheet, like just going right down the list.
Right. Like, yeah. What's your birthday? You know, yeah, is this the phone number to reach you at? Yeah.
And then
so then how did it happen? How did the train start going down the tracks?
I literally got a text from Wes Welker. And when I got it said like, hey, this is Wes Welker, assistant with the Texans, watched your film, liked it, would like to talk to you sometime.
Wow.
Like, what?
He's like, holy shit, I'm looking in the mirror 10 years ago.
I was like, no, honestly, like first thought, you're like, dude, someone's fucking with me hard. Like, no, he did not just text me.
That's hilarious.
And then yeah, I spoke to him on the phone a little while ago. He just like the film. He's like to work with you. He goes, I don't know if we're going to be able to draft you, but hopefully we can work something out. And then, so I didn't really hear much from any other teams. Like, you know, the possible like tryouts that got thrown around a lot. The rookie minicamp tryout.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I had been in contact with Wes and he had been in contact with my agent. And right after the draft, I signed with the Texans. That was like a no brainer for me. I'm like, I'm about to work with this goat.
Yeah. 100%.
I mean, so, as a small wide receiver, I mean, that's the guy you want to probably.
Like, so he doesn't text me. Like, honestly, it was like the same, back to the same place I was if Iowa didn't offer me a walk.
Wow.
I don't know what the hell I would have done.
But you were one of Bill O'Brien's favorites, yeah?
I don't know about that. I mean,
O'Brien liked you a lot.
I think he liked the Iowa guys. You know, yeah. He knew what he was getting in Iowa guys. That wasn't his first. I mean, they drafted Fedorowicz. There's some other Iowa guys down there. But yeah, dude, it was fun. He's a fiery coach, man. Dude had a lot of energy.
Yeah, that was cool. So then you got your shot, and then kind of talk about what was the span of your – it was like two
– I had a brutal start to my NFL journey. I had thumb surgery like 5 weeks after I got down to Houston. I like tore ligaments in my thumb, and then finally that was all good, but I was in a cast all summer. And then training camp, we were practicing like an inter-squad with the Patriots, and I broke a rib. And then I just played in the game like a couple of days later with a broken rib, and they're just putting like numbing it and everything, but it didn't actually numb it. You know how that goes?
Yeah.
Oh man.
And that was brutal game. Like any twisting I did, it was just like, you could feel like the rib like moving around in there.
Oh my God.
It was brutal.
But doing anything to just fucking stay alive in the NFL.
That sucked. And I ended up signing with the practice squad with them. And then like, 2 weeks in, it was a rude awakening. They're just like, hey, Riley, coach wants to talk to you. He's like, dude, you're cut. I was like, sick. Like, they're literally like, it's brutal. It's like one day you just walk in and you're like, you don't have a job.
Hey, guess what? You're out.
And like the worst part was, dude, my dad shipped my car all the way down to Houston. Like, you know, I made the practice squad. Like, dude, let's go. I'm living out of a hotel. I'm like, my dad sent my car down. You know, like, it's not cheap, by the way, to send a car.
No.
And literally 2 days later, cut.
Oh, wow.
At least you could drive it back.
I got in my car and I drove 18 hours straight to Dubuque.
Oh,
and I was
shit.
God.
What kind of thoughts are going through your head at that point?
I don't know. It's just like, because when they cut you, they're like, they do it nicely. They're like, hey, we want you to stick around. We might sign you back next week, which is like a brutal business in itself.
Of course.
It's just the unknowns.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I'm not hanging. Like, what do you want me to do? Pay for this hotel room while I wait and hope that you sign me back?
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I'm just getting the car, pack all the, my, you know, like whatever I have in a hotel room and drive back to Iowa. And then 2 days later, my agent calls me. He's like, hey, the Patriots want you to come work out. I'm like, that's also sick.
That's pretty cool.
Sick and sick.
But hey, yeah, it was pretty wild. Like I went out to New England on Thursday night. So I got cut on a Monday. I'm in New England on Thursday. So I'm in, like, the next morning, I'm in with, like, Philly Brown, a receiver out of Ohio State, and, like, a couple other guys that had already been in the league a couple years. And I'm like, dude, like, I just don't belong. Like, chances of me, like, they're going to put us through a workout at 6 a.m. We are going over the bags like you would at your first day of practice in college, like shuffling over bags. I did the L drill, the pro agility again.
Wow.
Four running routes. It was, and, like, they filmed everything. Like going over the bags, like your junior high.
Jesus.
And yeah, dude, the way they do stuff there is unmatched.
And so how'd that workout end out? Did you talk to the coaches afterwards?
Then they bring you in with a scout and he's like, we're going to sign you. And it's like, I was like, oh, that's awesome. And like, and it's like, it's like 9:30. He's like, yeah, practice starts at 10:30. Why don't you go get your stuff in the locker? I was like, what? 10:30, I'm out there with TB and Gronk and all those guys.
Holy shit.
Tell me that's not the wildest feeling of all time.
Absolutely insane. Like, talk about feeling like you don't belong.
Oh, yeah.
So uncomfortable. I was like, why am I here?
So you walk people in the are building at 6 a.m. just thinking you're there for a workout. And by 10 o'clock, you're catching balls from TB12.
10 o'clock, Tom Brady's looking around like, who the fuck is this guy?
Did we just hire the water boy to be my wide receiver now? What is
wild, though, is like, so, like, you know, I'm doing the workout or whatever. And I'm like, in the back of my head, like, yeah, there's no chance I'm getting signed today. But, in, you know, deep down, you're praying. You're like, God, please help this work out. And then, like, obviously, you know, they tell you you're getting signed, and then I'm in the locker room, and then all of a sudden you see Tom walking towards me, and I'm like, dude, what do I say?
I'm gonna shit my pants.
He goes, nice to meet you, Riley. I'm Tom. I'm like, dude, how do you know my name? I mean, that's crazy. Like, that's honestly what separates, like, the dogs. Like, they just are, like, on top of their shit. Like,
they know everything.
Right, dude.
That's actually awesome, you know. And that's, you know, everyone that I've heard play with Tom Brady has said that he makes it a point to come over and introduce himself, like, yeah, as if, like, no one knows who the fuck he is.
Right. And that's, I mean, I can attest to that firsthand. Like, the last thing I thought he was going to say is my name.
Dude, if Tom Brady came up to me and said, hey, Tyler, how's it going? I'm Tom. I'd be like, I fucking know, Tom. You're Tom.
Right, dude. It's crazy. But, and that's, like, one of the most wild things about New England. You think about this, like, literally legendary franchise, but, like, just a ton of, like, good ass people, like, in Iowa City, like, just, yeah, you know, regular people in the locker room, like, you know, just guys that like to work hard, but, you know, it's good people all around.
That's incredible. So then how did that come to a close, or talk about your time there, and then how did that kind of come to a close, and then bring us to where you are now?
Dude, that was crazy. So yeah, that was my rookie year. So I spent my entire rookie year on the practice squad. Cole Crosston, lived with him.
Shout out to the Floppy Savage. Yeah. We love the Floppy Savage, Ronnie.
We had some legendary times out there. We just, you know, just kept it going from Iowa. Just some great stories. And obviously, you know, with the characters out there in New England, all those guys, like, I mean, just, like, great stories with Gronk, and, like, just, like, never thought you'd be in that position whatsoever. Right. So we go to the Super Bowl, obviously not playing in it. And then, you know, you think, like, wow, we're about to win Super Bowl. And then that, you know, lose to Philly, and I was like, gosh, dang.
Is that hurt more than losing a Big Ten championship?
You know, it's hard to say. It's two different perspectives. One I played in, the other I didn't, but, like, you're right, still a part of it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, either way, they're both shitty.
Yeah, that's true.
But, yeah, so then second year, oh, I had surgery in the offseason on a finger, just massive. And then I played first game for New England. Like, I got cut, but they signed me before the season opener. Muffed a punt. Not good. Can't be doing that. And then they cut me, put me back on the practice squad, and then I had another surgery on my finger and just kind of rode out the year. And after that, I was like, man, I'm ready to hang it up. At that point, it had been 8 surgeries, and I was like, where do you draw the line?
Right.
Now I'm grinding it out just to hopefully snag a practice squad spot, get lucky. My body's deteriorating. And so
it's the same story.
This out.
Oh.
Okay. Oh,
that's not okay.
Not okay. Not at all.
At some point, you just had to make a decision for your health.
They tried to like fix it without like fusing my knuckle together and like reattach all my tendons. It was like my finger was still crooked, and so then they just fused my knuckle together, and it will never bend again.
Ugh. Well, jeez. Great.
Well, you got some stories behind it. That's gotta be fun.
Yeah. It was worth it, no doubt. But yeah, after that, I was like, you know what? I'm just ready to have a place to call home, live a normal life, and not kill myself trying to make a team anymore.
So after that, though, you kind of started traveling around and started working with Monarch, right?
Yeah. So my buddies from high school started the Monarch, and it's picked up a lot. And
that thing is legendary.
Automated jugs machine that literally is like the coolest thing I've ever seen. And you just attach this GPS to your hip and you can run routes and it tracks you GPS, like on a GPS while you're doing it. And you can pick like the mile an hour you want the ball and it shoots, it's on its own. No one needs to be there, which is like the coolest part. And so I was running around with those guys and I would just run routes for them and we'd demo for teams. And like we went out to the Bay Area, we did it for the 49ers, like Stanford, a bunch of, you know, cool trips that we got to go on and, you know, present this machine. And it's starting to take off for those guys now. So, you know, hoping that they can keep it going and get some more teams like Iowa on board.
And what is the life of Riley McCarron look like right now?
I moved to Chicago last June. I'm working at a little real estate company in Chicago at AJ Capital. We do like the graduate hotels. There's one in Iowa City. I'm not sure if you guys are too familiar with it.
Sure.
Graduates, yeah.
Boutique college towns and like just make the hotels, you know, fit the brand of that town or the life in that town. It's cool, like cultural thing. It's cool. But we're actually doing an MJ one in Chapel Hill right now. It's actually going to be pretty sick.
That's wow. Elite.
Yeah. Good timing.
Cool stuff. Yeah. So it's been and it's like a startup company. Like I wear a t-shirt and jeans to work. It's pretty laid back. So it's been a good transition, you know, when you're wearing sweatpants to work every day. It's not
heavy. For real. So, well, that is awesome, dude. That's sounds like you're enjoying it. And
Chicago's sweet, man. You guys ever come visit? Hit me up.
I love Chicago. Sure.
Are you staying around Lincoln Park or do you go down to River North? Where are you at? Where are you partying?
I'm in Lincoln Park, right by DePaul, actually.
Okay, so when you're going out, where do you go, though?
Honestly, I like to stay in Lincoln Park, hit the dive bars.
Okay.
It's kind of nice, though. You know,
Lincoln Park's a nice area for the young guys, I'd say.
It is. I mean, anywhere in Chicago, it's fun to go out, but like, I'm not into the whole club scene. Maybe like special occasion, like every once in a blue moon, but. Yeah, I like to hit the dive bars, man.
Nice. What's
going on in Chicago? It's good.
Sox or Cubs?
Cubs for sure, man.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Get him off.
Right. Dude, yeah, it's crazy. No sports has been brutal.
It has been wild.
Especially in Chicago, you go through an entire brutal winter. Nothing happens in Chicago in the winter. People just drink. And then the summer, it's like, oh, you got the beach. You know, you got so much more to do. And then it's just like you wait all this time for the summer to come around and we don't even have it.
And fucking Corona, baby. That's how it happens.
Kind of brutal.
Kevin,
such a weird time.
Yeah. Kevin, Drake, do you have anything else for Riley?
Hoover's mic is cut out. He's talking, but we can't hear him. I think he was about to wrap us up. Drake, do you got anything else for Riles Mack before we head out?
No, man. It's a great conversation.
That's what I was going to say. Riley, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate you guys having me, man.
I think the fans will really enjoy this episode. You are welcome back anytime, my friend.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you for having me. It's a good time.
All right.
As always, man.
Walk-ons, episode 118. That's it. We'll see you next time. Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.